Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the playbook for a Wednesday midweek game week home opener. Patriots, Arizona Cardinals here at Gillette Stadium. I'm John Rook. PFW's Eric Scalavino is here.
Who is that guy?
How long have we known each other?
I know. It's my fault. My fault entirely. I just told you as you're, you know, tapping away on the typewriter over here. Computer screen, whatever. See, that's where my head has been today. I've totally and completely been in a cave today because...
I don't blame you, John.
With this whole, you know, Notre Dame going to the ACC story today has completely and totally rocked my collegiate world today. I've had to try to work my way out of a paper bag, so to speak. So, actually, it's kind of refreshing to be able to move on to something else today. Coming up, obviously, Eric is with us here for the opening hour. We'll update everything on the Patriots. In the 3 o'clock hour this afternoon, Dave Pasch, who is the radio voice of the Arizona Cardinals, will join us, and we'll start moving our attention toward the Cards and Sunday's 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff here at Gillette Stadium. What are your overall impressions from this last week? And I say that knowing that over the last 24 hours or so, some of that controversy continues to swirl concerning Wes Welker's relative inactivity in the game on Sunday at Tennessee, which I largely poo-pooed here yesterday. I know that you guys talked a little bit about, you know, the Greg Bedard thing in the Globe today and surmising that maybe somebody was angry or what have you, but you know, honestly, I've never bought into that. I'm still not buying into it, and it just doesn't make good football sense as far as I'm concerned.
My overall reaction to Wes Welker.
Yeah.
That's your,
yeah.
Basically your question.
Yeah. Kind of a rambling thing. I had to kind of
That's okay.
I had to kind of like, it's like kind of like rolling a rock down the hill. Now that I'm rolling, I'll be okay.
Okay. Just don't get in front of it.
Just don't move in front of me because I'm not stopping.
I think I'm with you here. I didn't see it as big of a deal as I think some people are making it out to be. Was I a little surprised that how early in the game Welker was substituted for?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. But part of me is thinking this. They have 5 receivers on the roster. And I'm counting Matthew Slater in that, on the active roster. One of them, Greg Salas, the guy they traded for on Labor Day weekend, didn't play against Tennessee at all.
Right.
He was suited up, but didn't play.
Right.
So you essentially have... I'm taking Slater out of the equation as a viable receiving option. You have 3 receivers: Lloyd, Welker, Edelman.
Right. Okay.
Now Edelman has to this point been traditionally a punt returner. That's become his niche. You know, he's an emergency defensive back when things, you know, call for it, and he catches a pass here and there. When you only have 2 wide receivers, and those 2 wide receivers are in your starting lineup,
mm-hmm.
you need to develop some depth behind him.
Right.
And how else are they going to get Julian Edelman to develop as a receiver if they don't give him receiver reps? And now that they're going with what seems to be a quote-unquote base offense of 2 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, 1 running back, they're going to have to substitute for him. And he's not substituting for Brandon Lloyd because they're a different position. He is Wes Welker's backup.
Right.
So it makes perfect sense to me that to get him reps, they have to replace him. Now, the one time we saw both of them on the field was when they took Ridley out of the game. Edelman would come in, and then you'd have 3 receivers, 2 tight ends. You saw that personnel grouping a lot against Tennessee. I don't think it's a huge deal.
I never thought it was either, I'll be honest with you. Knowing that you're going to go with, you know, heavy tight ends in your offensive package, it doesn't make sense to have an inside receiver as the one wideout. It makes more sense to have the outside receiver as the wideout because you're already working in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the long and the short of it is, in layman's terms, the middle crowded and not so crowded. We need a receiver that can operate on the end. Brandon Lloyd, bigger target, easier to spot, perhaps better to go to. And that's taken nothing away from Wes Welker. We know what kind of a receiver Welker is.
God, I mean, he tied. He only had three catches, but those three catches got him to tie the franchise record for most receptions
ever. Right, right, exactly. So we know what he means to the team, and they're not going to just cast him aside because they're upset over the contract negotiations or, I mean, that's just, I really have a hard time believing that there would be any sort of vindictiveness. This is all about a business. It's all about the football aspect of it. It's all about getting wins. That's how this franchise has operated over the last now 12 years since Bill Belichick has been ensconced here. So for anyone to think that, you know, well, A, maybe they're upset with him, or B, maybe they're kind of upset because the pass hit him right, you know, early in the game, hit him in the face mask and he couldn't hold on to it. No. Use some football sense. I think all this is someone doing some bleep stirring, and I'm really kind of disappointed in someone like Greg Bedard, who I respect as a football writer. But why would you even do this? He's doing this to get Twitter followers and to get, you know, hits on the website and to get Boston Globe subscribers. Frankly, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, and if anyone's not going to play that game about, you know, taking retribution for the contract squabble or whatever, it's Bill Belichick. He's not going to – he doesn't care about that stuff when it comes time to kick off and put people on the field. He has no grudge against Wes Welker that I know of, and why would he?
No. I just – no.
He doesn't deal with that.
No. No. That's exactly right.
He doesn't deal with that stuff.
No, no, no. It just
– I mean, he has a say whether he wants a player to join the club or not, but as far as the contract negotiations, the agent isn't dealing with the head coach. He's dealing with the front office.
Right.
So that it's ridiculous to think that, oh, they were sitting him. Or the other thing I heard was that they're trying to diminish his value for the upcoming free agency at the end of this
and
year.
And I mentioned that yesterday here
on
the show.
Complete and baloney.
Of course it is, because first of all, the Patriots can throw the franchise tag on him again if they want to.
Of course, and the object is to win games.
Right.
He's one of your best players on offense. You can't limit him.
No, you can't. If you want to win games,
hello?
Yeah.
Play
I mean,
to win the game.
Thank you, Herm. Yeah.
That's all it's ever been. Money has never entered into the discussion, regardless of what you saw in Moneyball or anything else, you know, in some of these sports movies. It really doesn't. When you get actually between the stripes, it's all about the game, and you're trying to win. And the money stuff, the business stuff, is outside the lines, so to speak. And that's really where we are here. So I you know, for those that think that, you know, oh, the Patriots are de-emphasizing Welker, you know what? I said yesterday, and I'm going to say it again today, because I know that it's been a part of the Twitter sphere today, largely. But I will say this. If he's only got, say, 30 grabs by midseason, all right, you know what? Let's rediscuss. Let's open this discussion up.
But after one game?
No.
Relax.
No. Well, but I'd be glad to have this discussion with you at the midway point of the season, when by that time we'll be able to see the trends and we'll be able to see how this offense has operated, who they're targeting, where they're going, what's available, and maybe, Eric, who's healthy. And health is certainly going to play a factor in this also. Now, I've also seen where a couple of people surmised, well, maybe Welker's, you know, got dinged. Maybe he got a concussion or something like that.
He was fine.
He was in the game late anyway after that, you know.
He was fine.
Yeah, so I'm just like, no, I'm not buying that. I think that's just a convenient excuse for, hey, he only had three catches. Something's wrong. Dig something
up. Now, here's the thing. He only had three catches. Now, compared to what he normally gets, you're right. Only is a good
way to describe it.
Yeah, it's good. Good way to describe it. But you should be happy that Tom Brady has options other than Wes Welker.
No question. No question about it.
Brandon Lloyd.
In fact, that's the sick part about this offense.
Yeah,
they've got so many options. You can't put – there's not two footballs out there on the field at the same time. There's only one.
I would have been more concerned.
You're going to go the direction. You're going to go the direction that the defense dictates to you. And on top of the tight ends being out there, you guys already talked about it a little bit, and it bears repeating here. A guy like Stephen Ridley was going for 125. The running game – was effective. How many national pundits have we already seen over the last 48, 72 hours since the end of the schedule on Sunday? Have we already seen talk about the Patriots and how dangerous they could be and how unstoppable Tom Brady could be if you add a legitimate running game to the mix of receivers
Absolutely.
That he has?
Absolutely. There's no doubt that the running game played a huge part in the passing game and complementing it the other day against Tennessee. I would have been more concerned if, after adding Lloyd and all the hype about Hernandez and Gronk and their big extensions, if Brady went to Welker 10, 12, 15 times, because then I'm thinking, what is this offense if it's not Welker? And what if something happens to Welker? Then
no
you're screwed.
Question.
You can spread it out. I mean, if anybody's worried about this offense, they're crazy.
No, you shouldn't be. There's no reason to worry about Wes Welker. I mean, none. Zero.
Was anyone concerned about how few catches Brandon Lloyd had?
Zilch. I mean, no. Actually, it was kind of like, oh, hey, what happened on that one bomb play early in the game?
And I'll tell you what happened on that one bomb play.
Because I
thought it when I saw it live, and then after watching the film a few times, I'm convinced of it. As the ball reached its arc, it started to wobble.
Mm-hmm. He came back for the ball.
And I think he saw it wobbling and thought it's going to drop sooner than it would have.
Yep.
The problem is the ball kept on its trajectory, and so when he slowed down a little bit, it ended up being...
going over his head.
Yeah.
So he mistimed it.
He just mistimed it. I think.
And that, I think, is a trust issue with the quarterback, which largely we didn't have later in the same game on the back shoulder fade that he threw for a completion. Mm-hmm. So it tells me that whatever issues they might have had early certainly look to be cleared up now. Brandon Lloyd has to realize he's got to put his trust that Brady will get the ball there.
But I think if the pass were a perfect spiral, he would have hit him in stride.
Oh, there's no question.
Because I don't think Lloyd would have broken his stride.
It would have been 6 points.
Easily.
So if you got to put blame on anybody, it has to go to Brady in that instance, in my regard, simply because the ball wasn't delivered as it should have been in order to hit the receiver who had done his job.
Right.
And
I felt a little bit the receiver for, misjudging the thing, but
maybe.
I understood why he had to do it.
Again, right. You have to. He's trying to make a play.
When I saw it live in the press box, and
yeah.
by the way, the press box view there is the best one we've ever had in the NFL.
Is that right?
Unbelievable. We're low and right on. I mean, you probably have a good one from the broadcast
here at Gillette, yes.
Because it's on the lower level.
Right.
And that's how it is down there,
I
too.
Remember doing a...
Our
a,
press box here is up in the corner, so we're high up. But.
Yeah, I remember doing a Music City Bowl game there a few years back and remember thinking that, wow, we were right on top
view.
Of the field.
We really were on top of the field. So I had a good view, and that was on our side of the field. I was on the 30-yard line on that end of the field.
Right.
So I could see the ball perfectly. And when I saw it wobble, I thought, oh, this is going to be underthrown. And that's what, and I saw Lloyd slowing down, and I said, well, he obviously had the same thought, but maybe the wind took it or something. It just kept going when you didn't think it would have.
Yeah, I just, again, the ball, had some wobble on it. That's all there was to it. Really, I mean, honestly, it's even hard to fault Brady, but if you got to say, okay, well, blame has to lie somewhere because it wasn't completion. Well, it's on the quarterback. The ball wobbled.
Yeah.
It has to be. I mean, Lloyd was simply trying to come back and make a play on the ball.
And he didn't adjust as well to it as he could have.
As he could have, perhaps.
So there's a little bit of...
Okay.
I give it a little bit to both of them.
Semantics here,
sure.
Right? Certainly. It's a matter of semantics. All right, so the other issue then, and again, I want to get your thoughts, those that listen to this program, simply because, do you really feel like... And we started some of this conversation yesterday. We had a lot of... we had quite a bit of reaction, not only through email, but also through social media. So I'm going to get to all of that here in a couple of moments. But, in light of the continuing story that seems to be trying to be generated, when really, I don't think there's anything there, people. I'd like to get your opinions on Welker and or his inclusion or non-inclusion into the offense. The email address is webradio@patriots.com. You know that. I'm going to repeat it again. webradio@patriots.com. Our ace ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. It's a great time to jump into the phones if you've ever wanted to, no matter where you're calling from. I know you got an unlimited minutes plan anyway. Pick up the phone and dial 508-298-0398. Okay? You can also hit us via the social media sites on Facebook. If you're not a friend, you can hit me up on Facebook. It's John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. Submit the friend request, and we can chat, and we can also post and share things on the Facebook page. And then don't forget the Twitter. You've done a great job. Thank you, thank you, thank you. For those of you that have begun following over the course of the last week since we launched the 2012 NFL season, but I'd still need to hear from you. Eric has promised he's going to help me out here.
Yep.
So the Twitter page is at jrook0722. That's at J-R-O-O-K-E.
Very close to 1,000 followers here.
0722. Gotta hit the 1,000 mark.
Let's do it by
4 o'clock today?
Spread the word. Everybody out there who follows John, tell your followers. I know it's only Wednesday, but do a forward Wednesday.
Yeah.
Follow Wednesday.
A follow Wednesday. FW.
FW.
Hashtag FW. Hashtag FW.
Let's get this man over 1,000.
At jrook0722.
That's right. You remember all that? Did you get all that?
No. No, I didn't. I still don't, a lot about social media I don't get, but I'm having fun with it anyway, you know? I'm jumping into it. I've had the Twitter page for, gosh, darn near 3 years. But the problem is I never really got serious about going after and getting followers until this time a year ago, really.
Mm-hmm.
About this time a year ago. And then, you know, because you were with me when we started, you know, trying to build up some of the numbers a year ago. And then as we launched, you know, the Playbook show for last season. And then when the football season was over and got into basketball, the number dwindled. It didn't dwindle, but I just didn't get as many, you know, followers. Got a few through, you know, my college basketball stuff that I do, as you're well aware. And then all of a sudden, football starts to pick up, and boom, there's the followers again. So it tells me that's where the majority of all these people are following. Mm-hmm. And as I explained yesterday, I'm not one of those guys that tweets every 10 seconds of the day. I just don't do that. When I tweet, I like to feel like it means something. So you'll probably have a story concerning the Pats or concerning college football or even college basketball. Those are the areas that I follow mostly for my living. So
I'm laughing, John, because our very capable webmaster.
Yes.
One of them. We have two webmasters.
Yes.
One of them is very capable.
Yes.
Mike Haku.
Yes.
Sent out a you should follow at jrook0722 if you like hashtag peanut butter and jam.
Like it. Well, we started that on the PBGS, the one that, you know, Andy and Paul were ripping me for just a little while ago.
Peanut butter and jam.
Yeah, well,
session.
Andy was telling me that when he was a kid, and I wanted to smack
when
him right
play
there.
Calls.
Well, yeah, one of
he's still a kid, by the way.
Yeah, is he? How old is Andy?
Well, he's a 6-year-old and a 30-year-old's
well,
body.
Well, we know that. Okay,
35-year-old's
so
body.
35, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. But he said when he was a kid, he was listening to me back in the 90s or whatever. Doing basketball, one of the calls that he liked was the one when, you know, Fryer would go up for a dunk and I would say a peanut butter and jam.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so that's how that started.
Did you call the famous Jerome Lane shattering the backboard
no,
dunk?
No, that was actually the season before I started doing the radio. That was 1988. Actually, that was 88. Yes, 88. And I started in 89. Yep,
because I mean, obviously, Bill Raftery has the great TV call of that. But I
send it in, Jerome.
Yeah,
yeah, that was.
I didn't know if you were there for that.
No, I remember seeing it.
One of the greatest moments in Big East.
Yeah,
one of the greatest moments in Big East basketball.
I was still
unfortunately,
working. I know
against the Friars.
Not a great one, but I was in San Antonio at the time. I remember that one. I'm thinking, wow, that was impressive. Because that was before you had collapsible rims.
Yeah.
And so anytime a guy would go up with any kind of force, these rims were shattering, and the glass was shattering everywhere. So we were, it was kind of like, you know, he's a rim rattler. That's where the phrase actually got started. You know, you hear the Dickie V rim rattler, baby. You know, it's, that's where that stuff started. It was all from Jerome Lane's, you know, shattering the backboard against Providence back in 87. So a little history lesson for you, I think.
Nice.
Okay, little history lesson. So there you go. All right, so there you. That's how you get a hold of us. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Webradio at patriots.com. John.Rook on Facebook and at jrook0722 is the Twitter. Now, we will begin, and we're going to start talking very, very shortly about the Arizona Cardinals, because usually on Wednesdays here inside the playbook, that's when we kind of open up that playbook, so to speak, and really start focusing on the opponent. We try to get, you know, first dibs on that before others can do that. And so that's why we're here and what we're going to try to do. Dave Pasch, again, who is the radio voice of the Arizona Cardinals, and in amongst all of his duties, he's going to join us in our 3 o'clock Eastern Time hour today, and we'll jump in a little bit more about the Cardinals and what problems they might present. A little bit more Patriots focused now, though. Can we get a quick little update on practice today for those that may be just tuning in?
Sure, and I'm just posting as we speak to the web, to the blog. So if anybody out there, I will be updating it later with injury report news. But
yep.
The good news was Shane Vereen, who has been out since the Tampa Bay preseason game, was back. Looking no worse for the wear. Didn't seem to have any medical devices on him anywhere. Left foot was what he hurt against Tampa Bay. But he was out there, seemed to be running and cutting pretty well from the few minutes we were out there.
Okay.
Bad news, Dan Connolly, head injury against Tennessee late in that game.
Are we
not
prepared to say concussion?
Well, he was at the Mayo Bowl event on Monday night, the day after the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that might lead you to think, well, it's not that bad off, because if, you know, less than 24 hours after a concussion, I don't know if you're making public appearances. Maybe
depends
today's
on the severity of the concussion.
Well, I would think, but if it were severe,
why is he not back out there?
Yeah,
it's a legitimate question.
So maybe it's just precautionary. Maybe he'll be back. Maybe he only missed part of the practice today. Who knows? But they're already thin at that spot to
mm-hmm.
begin with,
mm-hmm.
and without him, you lose a versatile guy. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about that area right now. But those are the only two missing guys. They made a practice squad move, if you care about that.
Yeah,
Alex Silvestro is no longer on the team.
Right.
Kyle C-Y-H-L, that's pronounced Kyle, Quarles, safety from Wake Forest, spent a little time in camp with the Ravens, is now on the practice squad. Safety given number 31, that's bad news for him. Got last two guys that wore 31 did not do well here, and they were both safeties.
Okay.
Merriweather, Sergio Brown.
Yeah.
It's a poor guy. Maybe he can turn things around. We'll see. Four guys got practice player of the week black jerseys. Edelman, Cannon, Tarpinian, and rookie Francis.
Okay.
So we were surmising earlier.
They're working hard.
Well, they're working hard, but we were thinking Edelman played Chris Johnson's role maybe in practice. Francis might have been Cameron Wimbley.
Might have, I think that would make sense. Yeah, make a lot of sense, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Make a lot of sense. Okay. How about updating anything to report? You know that someone's going to ask about it, and you know exactly what I'm going to ask you about as far as Brian Waters is concerned.
Nothing. I think that ship has sailed, folks, even with Dan Connolly's injury.
You don't think there's any point in time that he would come back this year because he's under contract?
I won't rule it out completely because I don't like to do that with this team and this coach, but I mean, if it doesn't happen this week when they have an injury at his position, I don't see it happening. And there's been no talk about him. I think people are starting to.
Is there a point in time that during the season where he could report and still what? I mean, I know realize that he's under contract this year, so couldn't they put him on a did not report? Don't they have him on a do not did not
he's
report?
He's on the reserve did not report list right now, but he doesn't count toward the active roster.
Right. Okay.
So if he were to come back, somebody would have to go. And I don't know if they can really afford to let anybody go right now.
See, because I had a couple of callers and some emailers yesterday that basically suggested pay the man, especially in light of Connolly's now injury that's keeping him out of practice at least today.
I think people are assuming that it's all about that. And I don't – my gut tells me that it's not all about that. I think, and I have nothing to base this on, but I think he might just not want to move back from Texas.
Well, I think that was part of it, and I know that's been surmised by a lot of people that are trying to cover the story as best as they can without hearing from the man himself. Fact is that he, you know, we had heard early in the process here that he had some family things to attend to. Never got described more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, and again, just from hearing from some of my sources in Houston, it was that he was trying to help effectuate a trade between the Patriots and the Texans, which the Patriots wanted no part of.
Maybe they because they want his services.
Well, they not only want his services, but number two, why would you deal somebody to a conference rival that's expected to be good?
Well, it depends what you're getting in return.
And You know, understand.
They want to get us Andre Johnson. I'll make that trade right now.
Okay. But you're talking about a Pro Bowl caliber player. Also,
so is Waters.
Exactly. And, well, that's what I mean.
Oh, that's what I meant exactly.
You're talking about Pro Bowl caliber player. And to, you know, flipping that around a little bit, here's Brian Waters looking at it from his point of view. Hey, I came in, I signed a 2-year deal for cheap. I made the Pro Bowl for you in 1 year. Show me some love.
I'm sure there might be an element to that too, but something tells me it's more about the staying home than it is about the money because. And the reason I think that is because in the spring when he wasn't here, the head coach made a point to tell us that it was an excused absence, which to me says if he were haggling for money, it wouldn't have been excused.
Yeah,
unexcused.
Thank you, Bill.
So the fact that he was excused, and then when we got to camp and somebody asked him early in camp, what's Brian Waters' status, he said nothing has changed since the spring.
He's excused.
Which tells me he was excused. So that tells me that it wasn't
entirely
about the money.
It might have turned into that.
It might have turned into that, but it didn't start that way.
Or it might have at least entered the equation.
Maybe. But it, to me, it's saying that there's
another issue.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then.
But I think they need to move on.
Yeah. In other words, that ship might have sailed.
I think, unfortunately, which they could use them. They could definitely use them.
Do they look at another opportunity, another possibility? Do they keep hitting the waiver wire? Do they try to, you know, work on some kind of a trade? What do they do here?
I think they hope that Nick McDonald, who came back late last week, is healthy enough to try to take Connolly's place for now, if he can, and hope that Connolly isn't out for too long. If Connolly's out for a long period of time, then they might have to reassess and try to find somebody. But I hate trying to pick up a player you want to start, you know, at this late juncture.
Yeah.
It's doesn't usually work out too well.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you for the Twitter followers that just came through here.
What do we got? What are we up
well,
to?
Well, here's John says, I hate Twitter, but love what you do, so I'll show you some love. Thank you, brother.
All right.
See, I like that. That's all we need. That's all we need. I'm not going to kill your Twitter inbox with, you know, mindless dribble. It's going to matter. When I bring it, I'll bring it nice and strong, all right? How's that? Does that work?
Yeah, you better, because there are plenty of people who don't.
Well, that's the problem with
Twitter.
And
they get unfollowed.
And I understand exactly what John is probably talking about here. Fact is that, you know, Twitter, you have to really weed through a lot of the garbage in order to be able to, you know, get what you're looking for. And for it to be an effective tool for the media, especially in which to use to break stories, which is really what Twitter is fantastic with. Fantastic with. I mean, that's like I told you earlier, E, you know, I've been on top of this, you know, Notre Dame going to the ACC story all day, you know, for GoLocalProv.com, where you know that I, you know, write a column and host a Saturday show for them on the radio and all that stuff, terrestrial radio, not internet radio. And the fact of the matter is that I've been buried in it, but I was able to find out about it even before Twitter got a hold of it. And then once I got into it, Twitter, it just exploded and it got all over the place and ESPN picked it up and yada yada. So, I mean, Twitter's unbelievable. If you go to the right people, Twitter's great. But what you do have to do is watch for the people who are like, I had a sandwich for lunch.
Yeah, there are plenty of those out there.
And so that's why you have the unfollow button as opposed to, you know, defriending on Facebook or what have you. When you see that stuff, if that's not what you're into, then you certainly have the opportunity to unfollow, which is the beauty of it all. And I made this statement yesterday, and I believe it strongly about Twitter. If by some chance Twitter ever goes beyond or can go beyond 140 characters, email's dead.
Yeah. Although
it'll go the way of the postage service, the postal service. It'll die a slow, agonizing death.
Well,
there'll probably always be a need for it, but it will become the primary mode of transportation, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's starting to get that way. I think it's taking people away from Facebook, that's for sure. I know a lot of people who are saying they much prefer to communicate via Twitter than Facebook, whereas Facebook used to be the be-all, end-all.
Well, and this is
why people communicated. Now, people are still doing both, but I know more and more people who are going.
This is exactly, yes, exactly. And this is why the best thing to do here is you tie your Twitter account with your Facebook page, which I've done. So anything that I send out via Twitter automatically goes out on my Facebook page. So if you favor having your Facebook page up because you like to look at pictures or you're chatting with your friends or what have you, and you've got the time to do that, that's great. You're still going to be plugged in with the show here and what we're trying to do on Patriots.com and Patriots.com Radio. But In addition, if you don't do the Facebook thing, but you really like Twitter, you got us as well. So you got us both ways here, just by tying it through. Mm-hmm. I just give the option, the avenue which you choose to travel in order to get your information. We try to make it as seamless, as easy as possible. How's that work?
Beautiful.
See, here's my buddy John, who says, hey, how is Hernandez's knee? It looked like he caught it wrong on a play last week. And he says, great show as always. I'm discreetly listening at work.
Yes.
Thank you, JD.
Yep. Turn it up.
You need to let everybody else listen.
That's right. Get him some Twitter followers while you're out there. I know the play you're talking about, and he got up and immediately started shaking it loose.
Yeah.
And we saw him do that in training camp a few times, where he appeared to maybe jam his leg a little too hard, because he cuts very, very strongly. He does that quite a bit, and he's susceptible to those kind of things. But he didn't miss a beat. Played the rest of the game, was out there today. I don't think it caused any major problems.
Okay. My buddy Tim from British Columbia wrote a big one in here, so I'm going to do him the favor of reading it, because he's usually pretty good with his stuff here. He said, missed the show yesterday. Haven't grabbed the podcast version yet, but weighing in on the Welker discussion. I mentioned to you in the postgame show, it seemed Welker was being phased out. I didn't mean that as a way the team is freezing him out, just that the offense is changing or evolving. Right now, Gronk and Hernandez are offensively the strongest on the team.
Yeah.
They can't be covered. They're hard to tackle. Mm-hmm. Some teams have gotten better at covering Welker, and he's taken some huge shots after the catch the last few years because he became the obvious outlet for Brady under duress, becoming less reliant upon him is a good thing.
Amen.
That's spot on.
Amen. And you know when you go to him, he's going to make the catch 9 times out of 10 anyway.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about it. Spread the wealth. Go for those mismatches. The touchdown that Hernandez caught, the first touchdown of the game. Gronk, they had three tight ends. They had all three tight ends, and they used all three tight ends a lot in personnel packages against Tennessee. They had them all on the left side. They motioned Gronk to the right, and at the snap, they play faked to, I believe it was Ridley in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
Gronk went out on a pass pattern, and they had 7 guys in the box. The deep safety went and covered Gronk as a double team,
mm-hmm,
because you would think he was the primary target there. So Ho'omanawanui and Hernandez were both single covered and open on the left side of the formation. Brady had his pick. Obviously, he's going to go with Hernandez, but that's a mismatch. Hernandez is a mismatch. He's too fast for a linebacker, and he's too big for a corner or a safety. And as you saw, he made a great adjustment on the ball, made a great catch, and was right there. But yeah, I mean, it's this offense can be scary, particularly if they continue to block the way they did for Ridley in the running game. Give a lot of credit to Gronk and Hernandez in that department too, because it wasn't just the O-line, it was mm-hmm. the O-line and the tight ends chipping in. Because Ridley got a lot of his yards hitting the edge in between holes that Gronk and Hernandez created. Man, I'm telling you, the Titans bit on almost every play fake.
Yeah.
Bit hard.
Yeah, they
too.
Did. They did.
And
which is what made, you know, Ridley's day so effective.
Yeah.
Yeah, hugely. Tim also says, for what it's worth, some of the speculation comes, he thinks, from the cryptic comments that were made after the third preseason game regarding Welker's whereabouts. Agree with that?
No. Well, I mean, I think, are you saying that the speculation is because of what happened then?
Might have come from some of that, because typically the third preseason game is a game where you see a lot of veterans, and Welker
right.
didn't play.
And that was the Tampa game.
Yeah.
Well, we found out later that it was a death in the family.
Aha. Well, but it's still, you know.
And he didn't really want to talk about it.
And that's fair. And it's within his right to do that. But what it did is create speculation.
All right.
Which is why players have to understand. Athletes have to understand. Sometimes the media, your friend. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Okay. Sometimes you need the media mm-hmm. so the correct thing gets out there, because we are all, you know, we need to know. And it's just the nature of the beast in this country.
And if you hide anything our reaction immediately is, what does he have to hide?
Exactly. Then there's a problem.
Yeah.
So be out with it. Yeah. It's lousy. There should be an element of privacy. But really, we don't have any privacy in this country.
Yeah.
It's all out there.
No,
if you choose to go social media, you choose to be a part of this, you choose to do what you do for a living, you are out there, my man. Out there.
I think, though, if he had come out and said, look, guys, I had a death in the family. I'd rather not talk about it. I don't think there
perfect.
Would be any.
There would have been nothing else.
No follow-up questions.
See, again, this is where, you know, an agent, somebody PR, somebody needs to just say, all right, how do you want to deal with this? And if he says, I don't want to talk about it, I'm like, all right, that might not be the best way to do it, Wes, because, you know.
People are going to question you.
People will question. You should always be up front. And then again, I know some athletes are saying, well, I try to do up front, and then I get misconstrued, and then I get my words turned around, and so it's kind of like, I don't want to go anymore. But then you're just making the matters worse.
I agree.
There's just no good way to do it except to just man up and face it. That's really the only option you got. Because at least you can get your words out there.
Although, to his credit, I mean, in his defense, on this team, a lot of times, players are told not to say how they really feel on certain topics.
Well, this
so
is
maybe
why,
he, maybe he
okay,
didn't talk about
but
it.
This is why
huh?
this whole thing and what started our conversation off today, Eric. This is why this whole thing with Bedard and the Boston Globe and all these, you know, suppositions that he had and all this, you know, stuff going on. You know, his whole day would have been squashed today if we'd known that Welker was gone, missed that preseason game because of a death in the family. He wouldn't have had a story. It'd been a non-issue. Even with three catches for 14 yards.
Bedard's the one who broke that story
about the
personal issue.
Yeah, so that's all I'm saying. You know, that's why if he had said that, then you don't go for an angle. You don't look for something. Well, what's he hiding? Mm-hmm. Which is the whole angle of the story. Well, what's he hiding here? Yeah. There's got to be something to this, right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. I tend to think, you know, most of the time where there's smoke, there's a little fire. In this case, there might have been a little smoke, but it was nothing but a flame out. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yep. Ryan sends this on Facebook. John and Eric, who do you think is going to have a better season, Gronk or Hernandez, in terms of touchdowns and receptions?
Oh, boy. I think Hernandez might have more catches because I think, as we saw in the touchdown, Gronk was double-teamed. Gronk's going to see a lot more of those, but I think if they get in the red zone as often as I think they will, Gronk will have more touchdowns. Because he's unstoppable.
Right. Right.
And as you saw, the touchdown to Gronk came in the red zone. The touchdown to Hernandez came further out in the field on a good play. But I think Hernandez gets more of the catches at the end of the year. Gronk gets more of the touchdowns.
All right. One more time, say that again.
Hernandez ends with
more receptions.
Gronk ends with more touchdowns.
Okay, I'll buy that. I'll go along with that assessment. I do think that Hernandez is going to see a considerable more, shall we say,
I don't think he'll
activity.
Be double-teamed as much as Gronk will.
I don't know.
So
yeah, I think they're going
to have the opportunity.
I think they're going to choose their poison, and I think they're going
to
choose because Gronk's the one that was the Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Gronk's the one that had the summer from Gronk. Gronk's the one that doesn't seem to be tackleable in an open field by one person. So I think Gronk will probably get the share of the attention with a little, you know, maybe a little safety covering over.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think, coming out there?
Yeah.
And which means underneath, that's where Hernandez is going to have his opportunity to do tremendous damage.
Mm-hmm.
So I would agree with that. Receptions, Hernandez. Touchdowns, Gronk.
Yep.
That would probably go along those lines. All right. Got other questions? I hope you'll file them off. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook is the Facebook address, @JRook0722, Twitter page. More Inside the Playbook coming up.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Jerod Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Jerod Mayo's sacks at Jerod Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds are the 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Right now, we're having a grand opening sale to celebrate our new Kenmore Square location. You can get Red Sox tickets starting at just $19. With tickets to all the games, home and away, for all your favorite Boston teams, Ace Ticket has the best seats at the lowest prices, always. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com from any device.
Pats fans, here's your chance to experience the ultimate road trip. Enter the Patriots Ultimate Road Trip Raffle for a chance to travel in style with the Patriots to an away game. The grand prize includes seats on the team plane, a room in the team hotel, a pair of tickets to the game, access to the field on game day, and much more. Proceeds from the raffle will benefit the Patriots Charitable Foundation. Buy your Patriots Ultimate Road Trip raffle tickets today by logging on to www.patriots.com.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012 Bank of America Corporation.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now back to your host, John Rook.
And of course, social media at JRook0722. You can also hit us up on the Facebook page, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. We got 23 more to go, E, and we'll hit the 1,000 mark.
Oh, yeah, you can do it before.
Do that.
You can do it before 4 o'clock.
So if you're listening and you don't have Twitter, sign up for Twitter and then follow me, damn it.
That's right.
That's the way it works. That's the way it works. All right, a couple of things that we want to hit on. Number one, I know Coach Belichick earlier in his discussions today with the media was complimentary, at least for Bill it would seem, towards the rookie performances on the field this past Sunday. And defensively, we had certainly a great presence felt from Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower, and even Tavon Wilson,
right,
who made the pick in the end zone off the tip ball.
Right. All three of those guys made great plays in that game. Complimentary isn't the adjective I would use to describe Bill's characterization of them, though.
For Bill, though, that's, you know, I thought it was, you know,
I think the fact that you know, he wanted to stress that they need to be reminded that it was just one game said all you need to know about what he thinks about all of the hype that they've got.
That's complimentary for him.
Well, okay. Yeah, maybe you're right. But
it is.
Yeah.
I'm not
lying.
He did call
it a mature group at one point. So, yeah.
Yeah, and he did say mature group. Yeah, that's pretty good. Anytime you can throw a rookie in there, you know, and describe their actions as being non-rookie-like, because, you know, when you're a rookie, you're expected to make mistakes.
Sure. But, no, I was very pleasantly surprised and encouraged by their contributions and just the way the defense played overall. You know, Titans don't have that prolific an offense, but they have some dangerous players, and they just absolutely smothered the running game. They buckled down a little bit in the passing game after that rough first quarter or so, and they got to locker. They did what they were unable to do consistently last year, which was put pressure on the opposing QB. I was very encouraged, and if the offense can keep running the ball and the defense can make the plays that they did the other day, mm-hmm. Boy, this is going to be a tough team to beat.
James on Facebook says, I saw ESPN as the Pats number one in their power rankings. Stephen A. Smith went all racist raven on it, but that's besides the point. I personally see us coming out in FU mode in big games this year. This is the first year with Brady as QB after a Super Bowl loss. You can't touch our receivers. Ridley looked awesome in the D-line and linebacker core. Let's just say they better throw deep if anyone wants a shot at competing. Somebody, I think, that's clearly buying into what the Patriots might have started this past weekend.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, and again, it was just one game, but if they can do this week in and week out, they are, like I said, going to be tough to beat because you don't see many teams with that kind of balance that they had on offense, and that's what they were missing on defense was those plays, those key plays that weren't made, the interceptions that weren't made, the strip sack, the pressure, the stuffing of the running game was just phenomenal. I mean, you know, they have another chance to do it this week, and then they get a real sharp test when they have to go to Baltimore. And that's going to be, I think, the real test. The early test is the Baltimore game. Because after that...
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And after what I watched on
I don't
want to
look
football,
too far ahead, but... You know.
I realize that, and I know that that's the initial tendency here. And we are going to touch on Arizona, but after watching what the Ravens did on Monday night, and they just kind of opened it up, I was like, wow, that was impressive. I mean, if I was ranking the teams right now, and these power rankings obviously really don't mean a thing, but if I'm ranking the teams right now, San Francisco, I said yesterday, might deserve to be number one just because the NFC appears to be a little stronger from top to bottom. But what Baltimore did Monday, how is Baltimore not the best team in the NFL right at this very moment?
It's hard to deny. It is. I mean, again, a part of it, though, they played the Bengals, and I know the Bengals were a playoff team last year, the rookie quarterback and all, but this to me is typical Cincinnati. They look like a team that's a contender one year, and then the next year they fall flat. Mm-hmm. So part of me is not really buying into the Bengals either as part of that. You know, could have been a lot of the equation too, was that the Ravens were playing a team that could end up being a doormat in that division. But
Right. Although
they're not going to be worse than Cleveland, I should take that back.
No.
They're not going to be worse than Cleveland.
Not any worse?
No.
All right. All right, well, then let's take this opportunity then to begin turning the page toward Arizona. We've been promising we'd do that for the whole hour, and you and I love to digress and get off. And we've been talking.
We've
had good football stuff. It's good stuff. I think when you think of the Arizona Cardinals, and I still slip every once in a while and stay St. Louis, how bad is that? Mm. It just shows my age, I think, more than anything else. But one person I know that they have that you can certainly, you know, take to the bank as being dependable, reliable, outstanding, a superstar of the game is Larry Fitzgerald, their wide receiver. Mm-hmm. But Arizona does have a little bit more than that. I guess the biggest issue or one of the issues that the Cardinals may be having is, all right, who exactly is throwing the ball to guys like Fitzgerald?
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Assumption? Yeah. I mean, there was a quarterback battle the whole summer. John Skelton won out and then got hurt. Now the extent of his injury, we don't really know yet. Cobb finished the game last weekend. You know what? Whichever one of them plays, I think, is going to have a rough time of it, though. I just don't see a real threat from either one of those guys. Now, they have gotten this team has gotten beaten by quarterbacks who aren't exactly Hall of Fame candidates either. I mean, look at when Green Bay came in here. Was it last season, season before, when Matt Flynn mm-hmm. came in and lit up the place?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've made some changes. They're a little bit better, we hope, on defense than that. But the Skelton-Cobb combination, whoever it is, doesn't really – they don't scare me at all. Fitzgerald scares me. Now, if the quarter, whoever the quarterback is, can get the ball out there, then I might be, you know, a little nervous. But Fitzgerald might be a moot point if he can't get any passes thrown his way.
Beanie Wells,
yeah.
Ryan Williams, LaRod Stevens, Howling. I mean, that's not a bad trio at running back.
Yeah, yeah, they have some talent there. I've never been a huge Beanie Wells fan, but that's just me personally. Howling?
LaRod Stevens Howling, former Pittsburgh Panther.
Yeah. He's not too bad. They have some weapons there, but I just don't have any confidence in that offense.
Todd Heap, former Baltimore Raven, is a backup tight end,
right.
At one point in time, he was a great target.
He was, yeah.
You'd have to consider him, and yeah, oft injured. That's why he's not really considered one of the elite anymore, I would think. Andre Roberts is on the other side at wideout across from Larry Fitzgerald. Early Doucette is a backup there.
Yep.
Michael Floyd, you know, rookie, is out there as well.
There
seems to be some potential. You're right. It's a little odd that John Skelton would be given the opportunity to back up take the job away from Kevin Cobb.
Right.
As it turned out. Defensively, what do we know about these guys?
Peterson, he's the guy everyone was talking about today.
Okay.
As not only a defender, but as a return man.
He's, from LSU, who clearly was one of the top, defensive players in the country when he came out.
Yep.
But how does a cornerback in Patrick Peterson, what can he do to really effectuate the rest of your defense? In other words, I'm thinking that it seems to me it'd be more valuable if you had a down lineman or an end or even a backer in terms of being your leader and being able to affect others defensively rather than a defensive back.
Well, do you feel that way about Darrell Revis in New York?
In a sense. I think Revis is an incredible talent. But he can't – in fact, I think he's a good example of that. You talk about getting out on Revis Island. But, he can't go out and create islands for all the other 10 guys on that defense. So I'm just saying I think that, having a guy like, say, a Vince Wilfork or even a Gerard Mayo in the middle is probably better to make your overall defense better than having a cornerback.
Because it starts up front?
Well, yeah, it has to start up front. It always starts up front. You got to get through the 7 before you get to the 4.
Yeah.
And a cornerback can only cover one guy. Whereas you have a down lineman that can take up 2 or 3 guys, and allow somebody else to come in behind him and make a play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying it's a simple numbers game. Now, and that's with all due respect to Patrick Peterson. I totally agree with you. He's a guy that has got incredible talent, good, solid young player, great cornerstone perhaps for that defensive backfield for Arizona. I don't know that is who you really want to be your bedrock defensively.
He's a big guy, though. Maybe he can change that mold. He's big for a corner.
Can he line up at linebacker?
No, probably not.
Well, there you go. That's all I'm saying. You can do more if you're a part of the front 7. You can effectuate more players and occupy more of the opposing offense rather than being a corner.
I'm curious.
I would
say
that if he were a safety, he might have more opportunity to effectuate more change or
like
more
Rodney
influence.
Harrison.
Yes. Because safeties we've seen come up and, especially when a safety's playing, cover 2 or cover 4 or whatever, there's more responsibility. A corner's job is what, Eric?
Cover the receiver.
Exactly. A receiver.
A receiver. Yeah.
A receiver. Mm-hmm. He's not, supposed to take up, unless you're playing zone. If you're playing zone,
right.
Well, then okay, then you got
to get whoever gets
the receiver
ball in your area.
Exactly.
I'm curious, though, how, if they go, man up, which I would assume they will, who they assign him to.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Lloyd? Is it Welker? I mean, Lloyd's the bigger body. Welker might be the more, the guy that Brady trusts more, maybe at this point. I think it'll be interesting to see where Peterson lines up.
Well, I know that for instance, in You're Too Deep, in the magazine this week, you have him lined up against Lloyd. I realize that's probably a random picking. And it makes sense.
No, it wasn't, actually.
Well, it makes sense. It makes absolutely sense. You probably want to put your top defensive back
on your top
wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's why left corner, back it up. your top receiver typically lines up to the right of the quarterback because generally right-handed quarterbacks
are going that direction.
It's easier to throw in that direction. So you typically put your best receiver to the right, which means your left corner is typically your premier corner.
Correct.
Usually.
Typically.
You know, so in the depth chart you have there in front of you, that's why I have Lloyd and Peterson together because to me
it makes sense.
It makes sense that Lloyd's the number one, technically number one guy. You put your number one corner on that side.
Some other names of note. You've got former Patriot and William Gay on one side.
No.
That's not the same guy.
No, he used to play for Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. That's
you're
what
thinking,
I'm thinking
of. Randall Gay.
I'm thinking of Randall Gay.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. William Gay on the other side. You've got
Calais Campbell.
Calais Campbell was from University of
Bill
Miami.
Bill was very high on him today.
On Campbell today.
Yes.
Got good speed. I'm just wondering why. Wonder why he hasn't broken out. Thought that in college that he would be one of the next great linemen to come from Miami.
Maybe it's the way he's being utilized there. I don't know. Maybe it's just the rest of the guys around him. Not a, you know, his team is often in the hole, so there's not a lot of opportunity for him to just go after the quarterback.
Paris Lennon, Darrell Washington, inside backers.
He's a former Patriot.
Yep. Lennon?
Yeah.
Yep.
Training camp guy
for a brief time.
Very briefly,
right?
Yeah.
Well, a familiar name for me, Sam Acho.
Texas guy, Longhorn
on the outside. And then,
God bless you.
The safeties, Adrian Wilson and Kerry Rhodes.
And James Sanders, another former
Sanders.
Patriot, is in
the mix. Yeah, Sanders is in the mix.
Yep.
Behind Rhodes at free safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, decent safety group there, I think. Those are some big guys. Both of them, Rhodes and Wilson, are big. You know, usually your free is kind of a smaller guy.
Mm-hmm.
They're interchangeable, these two. So there's some. That's a little bit of a concern because Kerry Rhodes, former Jet, played this team and Tom Brady plenty of times in the past. So that's something to just keep an eye out for, that secondary. And Calais Campbell, I think, has the ability to get to the quarterback still. I mean, he may not be the breakout, like you said, but I think he's still dangerous enough that you might have to put somebody else to help out over there.
And your initial inclination is you really don't have any concern with these guys for Sunday.
I don't think – I'm not taking them for granted, but I just – I don't foresee the Patriots losing to them. No.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I don't have a score prediction yet, but we'll save that for tomorrow.
Yeah, you're working on that. That's right.
I'm still working on that, but I don't see them.
They're going to roll them.
I don't know.
Three touchdowns.
I don't know if it's going to be a roll. I predicted a roll last week, and I was right. And by the way, did I not pick the defensive touchdown?
I said
defensive and/or special teams.
I think somebody in PFW when you weren't here yesterday gave Paul and Andy credit for that prediction. I think.
Unbelievable.
Because Paul was like, but Paul stood up for you because he was like, I don't think we predicted that. He's like, I'm pretty sure somebody else predicted that.
That was me.
So he set the record straight.
Yeah. John's just sitting here disgusted.
No, not at all. I just
I'm working. I haven't gotten I think it'll be maybe a little bit closer than last week, the final score.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't formulated my final prediction yet.
Okay.
I don't see them losing, though.
Okay. All right. We'll discuss further tomorrow. Yeah. All right. So thanks, E. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
No problem.
All right. As we hit the 3 o'clock hour, pause here for a break. Don't forget, webradio@patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. You can also hit us up at John Rook on Facebook and at JRook0722 on the Twitter account. Coming up in hour number 2, we'll get into more on the Cardinals. Dave Pasch, the radio voice of Arizona, is coming up inside the playbook.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pats tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, Better Banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call Better Banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Jerod Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Jerod Mayo's sacks at Jerod Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Right now, we're having a grand opening sale to celebrate our new Kenmore Square location. You can get Red Sox tickets starting at just $19. With tickets to all the games, home and away, for all your favorite Boston teams, Ace Ticket has the best seats at the lowest prices, always. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com from any device.
I say 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Pats fans, here's your chance to experience the ultimate road trip. Enter the Patriots Ultimate Road Trip Raffle for a chance to travel in style with the Patriots to an away game. The grand prize includes seats on the team plane, a room in the team hotel, a pair of tickets to the game, access to the field on game day, and much more. Proceeds from the raffle will benefit the Patriots Charitable Foundation. Buy your Patriots Ultimate Road Trip Raffle tickets today by logging on to www.patriots.com.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012 Bank of America Corporation.
I'll bet you anything right now that this is sending a shiver right up Stripper's spine. Hey, I wonder, I need to hear from you, Strippers. Welcome back, everybody. It's hour number two here in Patriots Playbook. We played a little Name That Fight song yesterday, and yes, that's obviously my alma mater, Texas. But I wonder if Strippers knows that the big news out of, his so-called home team land is today is that Oklahoma is now starting their own television network. That was the big news today. One of the big news besides Notre Dame jumping to the ACC.
Copycat, huh?
They're copying us.
It's the Longhorn Network, right?
Well, they're going to call it, I believe they're going to call it Sooner TV. Yeah.
So it's a copycat.
Yeah, it is.
The Longhorn.
It is a copycat. Although it's going to be produced by Fox. Fox Sports is going to produce it, and I guess it's going to be seen in approximately 9 million homes in Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, which is about 9 million more than can get the Longhorn Network right now. So
that's what you got to ask for. You have to ask for Christmas. For Christmas, you have to ask for the Longhorn Network.
Well, I would love to get it, but the problem is there's only two major carriers.
Okay.
You have to have Verizon Fios or AT&T UVerse. That's it.
Can you not get Fios in your neck of the
woods? I can get Fios. The problem was is that when I moved my residence, Verizon was on strike, so I tried to re-sign up for Fios, and I couldn't get it because they were on strike. So I'm like, well, I don't want to do without TV because who the hell knew?
Yeah.
Who? I mean, especially me. I mean, that's actually a tax deduction for me. I have to watch games.
Yeah.
Shocking, isn't it? I got to watch games for a living. It's a hell of a gig if you can get one. But I had to do something, so I went back to DirecTV, and I said, sign me up.
Yeah.
And then Fios is like, okay, when do you want us to come out? And I said, dude, I just signed up 2 weeks ago.
So how long is your deal with DirecTV?
2 years.
All right. That sucks.
So unless DirecTV comes up, you know, in another year, I've got another year to go on the dish.
Yeah.
But believe me.
Yeah, you got to get, once that's over, you got to get back with
it. I'll go back to Fios.
Because it was great with, like, you know, I was playing the Michigan State song.
Yeah.
That's where my sister went, and I have a bunch of family out there.
Yeah.
So when my dad and my mom back in their house got Fios, we got the Big Ten Network. And it's great. Like, Fios has such great flexibility.
I actually love watching Big Ten Network.
With all these college networks that are now available, like, Fios is fantastic if you're a college football fan.
Well, Pac-12 is doing something similar with their regional nets. Big East is going to try to do that. At least we think. God only knows what the Big East is going to do now that Notre Dame's gone. I want to say one quick thing about that.
Yeah, you sound off on that.
Well, only because, you know, it's a huge story nationally today. It's going to affect a lot of things around the country. I know many of you who are listening going, oh, God, here he goes, because I don't really care. And here's the problem with this. Number one, I'm becoming disenchanted somewhat with collegiate athletics now because it's all a blatant money grab. So why don't we just call everything pro sports? Why don't we just annex college football, Division I college football, and just make them the minor leagues of the NFL? We really should. Because that's exactly what it is. Notre Dame said today, well, we need to put ourselves in a position to have better opportunities for, you know, our athletes. Mule muffins! That's not what it's about. It's all about, it's all about recruiting for those coaches. They feel like they can recruit the East Coast better. And I will also tell you, this is exactly what I believe Notre Dame is moving for. They're moving because they don't want to face, they don't want to play, they don't want to be aligned with SMU, Houston, Central Florida. So, in effect, what they're doing is they're trading away the newcomers into the Big East for North Carolina, Duke, and Georgia Tech. Does that make sense to you? And that's with all due respect to those schools who are coming into the Big East and those schools, you know, from parts of the country that you're listening right now. You know, you probably should be, you should probably be offended by Notre Dame's move, because Notre Dame has always had this holier than thou, high and mighty attitude. They're the only ones that play an independent schedule in football. I don't think that'll stop, by the way. But they've said one thing, and clearly now they've gone and done another. They've said for all these years, we're with the Big East, we're partners with the Big East, we're not going to move into with football, we like where we are with all of our other revenue sports, non-revenue sports, Olympic sports, and all of a sudden, bang, now they're going to the ACC? Where's the incentive? Are they getting that much more money? I'm not buying that either, especially since Notre Dame now is dealing a real, let's just say this is a wound to the Big East chances in the current contract negotiations and intercollegiate athletics that are going on. Big East is trying to get a new TV deal. This is a huge gaping wound for the Big East because now you don't have Notre Dame. You don't have that national brand, if you will, if you think they still have a national brand. Granted, it's been watered down a bit in the last few years, but nevertheless, it's still Notre Dame, lots of Subway alumni. They've just, I don't want to say it's a mortal wound because I still think the Big East is going to survive, and I'll get to that in a moment, but what they've done here is they've decided that, you know what, we don't want to be aligned with what the Big East is becoming. We want to be aligned more academically minded, and we want to be aligned more with lacrosse and soccer and things like that, which the Big East is just getting into. And obviously the ACC has powerhouse programs already in, even though they're non-revenue generating sports. So Notre Dame can't say even that it's really all about the money. To me, this is all about snobbery. It's all about elitism. That's what Notre Dame wants to do. And they've turned their backs on a lot of other outstanding institutions academically. And might I also add, church-wise as well. How about Providence? How about Georgetown? How about St. John's? Seton Hall? Catholic institutions, all that Notre Dame said they were sticking around with because, you know, of their affiliations with them, and now they're turning their backs. The whole thing just smells. It really does. And, of course, as I was just getting to, it's really much ado about nothing because Notre Dame was never a part of Big East football. Say what you want to about Big East football. They've had to reinvent themselves about six times. I think they've done an admirable job of reinventing every time. So this doesn't affect football. It really doesn't affect most of the rest of the conference. In fact, I know so many people within the Big East who have been in the league or around the league longer than I have, and I've been around the league for 25 years out of the now 33 years that it's existed. So almost the entire length of the conference's life, I've been involved with it. And I can tell you that so many of these people, from day one almost, always wanted Notre Dame to either bleep or get off the pot. Either you're in as a conference member or you're not in as a conference member. And if they weren't ever coming in football, why did you keep them around for all of the other sports? I always wanted to know that. I always said that when all this stuff first started breaking out about 2004, 2005, when Boston College and Miami and Virginia Tech were the first schools to really pull the plug on all of this, you know, craziness that's going on throughout the country. I said, you know, the Big East should tell Notre Dame to stand up and be with us, or you're against us. And I said at the time, the Big East should be bold and boot Notre Dame out. I got laughed at. Who's laughing now? Who's laughing now? Notre Dame has done to the Big East exactly what I thought they would always do. They've jumped for a better offer. It's, you know, I don't know how much better an offer it's going to be. I mean, they're clearly doing this for basketball. They're clearly doing this for lacrosse and some of the other sports. But they're also doing it for academics because they've got their nose in the sky like they always have. And they just didn't want to be, I guess they feel like SMU and Central Florida and Houston and Memphis and some of the other schools that are coming in are just lesser class citizens. Why else would Notre Dame do this? It makes no sense to me whatsoever. Especially when they've said all along, we like our Big East partners. Clearly they don't like our Big East partners. And they haven't for some time. And this is the problem. You know, once you start the bleeding, it's very, very hard to stop it. Happened with Syracuse, with Pitt, with West Virginia. Now it's happening with Notre Dame. But there are, and again, the biggest problem of all today with this issue is the fact that nationally this is going to be perceived as a near mortal wound to the Big East Conference. It could not be further from the truth. And the reason is what I just told you. There's so many people in the Big East, in schools themselves, as well as in the conference office and media who cover this league, and they've been with me all along. You got to either tell Notre Dame to get in or get out. Today they chose to get out. Great. Move on. What they brought you is notoriety because of their Subway alumni. They didn't really bring you much of anything else. Big East still has a national footprint. Oh, they're going to lose the South Bend, Indiana market. Oh, big deal. Big deal. And by the way, I heard Digger Phelps today. Obviously, you know, former Notre Dame coach, you know, in wonk for ESPN. He said something that was just factually incorrect that just galled me. He's talking about how the ACC now is going to move, you know, their basketball tournament, postseason basketball tournament from Greensboro to Madison Square Garden again. Digger, if you just do a little bit of homework, you'd understand that there's an extension that's about ready to be signed. In fact, it may have already been signed, that's going to keep the Big East tournament at Madison Square Garden in New York through 2024. So I don't think it's going anywhere, buddy. Please. Anybody that's going to listen to that guy, you deserve what you get. That's all I'm going to tell you. All right. I'm off the soapbox. It is a big story nationally. It will affect intercollegiate sports because of a perception that this is just another wound to the Big East Conference. But really, when those are in the know in the Big East, they're kind of like, oh, thank God Notre Dame's gone. Now we can get on with it. It stinks that they're gone, but it doesn't stink that they're gone. So there you go. All right, web radio at patriots.com, ace ticket hotline 508-298-0398. Let me get some emails in here. James says, so my dad was telling me the tale of back in the later 70s and early 80s on Monday Night Football at the track. He called the Patriots Stadium, He ran on the field and mooned everyone. I know Paul is like 85 years old. He has to remember that. Does anyone else? God, no. Really? Who cares? Joe in Michigan. All right. All this talk about Welker is causing a headache. Do you think that there is really anything to worry about? No. I believe that if Welker was worried at all, he wouldn't have made the joke about Brady being the toughest metrosexual he's ever seen. I bet Welker gets at least 7 catches next game and between 7 to 80 yards and a touchdown. Thoughts? Yeah. I don't think Welker's, no. Welker's, I cannot stress this anymore. As Eric and I were talking about in the opening hour, this is way much ado about nothing. Way much ado about nothing. Welker will continue to be an option offensively. That's all there is to it. More weapons are good. Fewer weapons, bad. Sean in Maryland. Why is everyone worrying about Welker? One game. Why force Welker into the lineup to get smacked by someone when Ridley was having a career game? That's a good point. Welker's worked harder than anyone of the Patriots in the last 5 years. He made one mistake, sadly the biggest game of all, talking about the drop of the Super Bowl. Then he comes out taking reduced snaps. Everyone is hitting the panic button. Do not worry. No one on that offense is more reliable on third and short than Wes. He's almost as guaranteed as Kevin Falk used to be. That's, I think, a very good point. Good email, Sean. And by the way, you can make a good point and not necessarily agree with me. I know sometimes it seems like that. It seems like that to me even. I'm always saying, ah, that's a good point. Happens to be how I think. It's a good point. But you can also make a good point and don't agree with me. As long as you're bringing, you know, legitimate reasons to the table and a legitimate argument to the table, that qualifies as a good point. And believe me, I got to admit, I realize that this is Patriots.com radio. It's Patriots playbook. It's, you know, it's everything, you know, red and blue with New England. But at the same time, we do tend to look at stories around the NFL, big stories. For instance, I was going to mention with Eric and we just ran out of time, but one of the other big stories today that's been, you know, buried by the Notre Dame move to the ACC nationally is the fact that the NFL is going to go with the replacement refs through week 5. Did you see that today? Did you know that today? Yeah, that's a part of it. That was the story today. Kind of got buried in all the other stuff that's going on, but yeah, the league is telling everybody to be prepared to go through 5 weeks of the replacement refs that we saw in week 1. So I don't know how you feel about that, and that was actually going to be my question today. If you have a chance, we've still got 35 minutes approximately left in the program, then fire off an email, webradio@patriots.com, or give us a call, 508-298-0398, 508-298-0398. All right, Sean in Salt Lake, thanks for hanging on, Sean. You're in the playbook.
Hey, I just have a question for you guys. I was listening to Ridley on WEI on Monday.
Yeah.
He made a comment about Benny, how great he was, his rookie season. And then he made a comment about Kevin Falk and that he was just in the locker room the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normal for somebody who's not under contract to be in the locker room?
Well, I guess it's supposed whether you know, normal. I don't really know what normal entails. Normal can entail a lot of stuff. And I'm not trying to be snide or anything here, Sean. I know that former players or players who were recently on teams make appearances in locker rooms all the time. Just because they know the people inside, they know the people that'll let them in the door. Some of them might still have their key card, whatever. I also know that in Kevin Falk's case, he was hoping to be re-signed this year. It never materialized. I think the Patriots kind of decided it's time to move on. I don't think Kevin Falk ever officially retired to that end. So the fact that he was seen in the Patriots locker room doesn't really surprise me. He's still very friendly with, you know, the backs, the offensive receivers, everybody that's in there, the coaching staff. You know, he's still kind of a part of the family, and my guess is they probably still allow him to use some facilities. I don't know that for a fact, but if he's in there a lot, and I've only seen him once myself, it really didn't dawn on me that, hey, how come you're here? You're not under contract. I don't know that that really affects anybody one way or the other.
Well, where my question was coming from, I didn't know, with me hearing that he was in the locker room, it led me to kind of wonder, was Bill thinking about bringing him back at some point this year?
Well, I can understand why you would make that assessment. That's not a far reach at all. Frankly, I think there are probably others that have thought that as well. And the answer to that is no, probably not. Although, in this business, you can never say never. And that if there were, you know, an injury situation and an emergency situation, and you know he knows the playbook, and, you know, if he feels like he could give you a couple of games, he's staying in shape. Obviously, you maybe have seen him. He's worked out at your facilities, yada, yada. You might do something like that. I would say it would probably have to be an extraordinary situation for it to happen, but that doesn't mean it couldn't.
Last thing on the running game I just wanted to get your take on.
Yeah.
In the preseason, I want to say it was game two, game three, Shane Vereen in the second half had a really good game.
Yep.
And before he got injured, it was basically it was his job to lose. And then, of course, Ridley had his game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I think if both of them stay healthy, we can have a really excellent backfield.
Well, yeah, it's great to have health because then you have depth opportunities, and then you have, you have health opportunities revive themselves as well because, you know, you've always got someone to come in and spell the other guy. We saw Woodhead get some carries last week against Tennessee that he might not ordinarily get. Remember, Woodhead's really kind of filled that Kevin Faulk role. Okay.
Yeah.
So because of that, he might not get but four or five carries a game, if that. Those are carries that would normally go to a guy like Shane Vereen if Vereen is healthy. Now that Vereen is back in practice, which was one of the news items for us today, okay, then if as long as he's good to go, then you'll probably see Vereen come in less of Woodhead in those particular instances.
So if what do you think the chances are that he gets cut this year?
Who gets cut? Who gets
Woodhead.
Cut? Woodhead? You know, that was
his production's been down quite a bit.
Well,
I mean, he is
that's been rumored, but again, how many times has he touched the ball, Sean?
Yeah.
I mean, production's going to go down if you don't touch the ball. And you have to touch the ball for your production to go up. You know, as long as he understands, as long as he hasn't done things that, like, you know, miss blocks or not run the assignments that he's supposed to run when he's in there, there'd really be no reason to cut him unless you decide that, all right, we're healthy enough with two guys there, and we do have Lexi Hilliard, so, you know, a fullback there, and we really need the roster spot for another position that might be more needed at this particular time. Then you could see a guy, maybe like Woodhead, become expendable. But unless that were to come, no, I wouldn't say he'd be cut at all. Doesn't mean it won't happen. But if it does happen, rest assured it's because they've found a definitive need elsewhere on the roster.
One last question, and I'll let you guys go. Do you think there's any chance they'll bring Carter back?
I think there is a chance. I'm sure that they've been he's been shopping himself around. I don't know that he's still 100% healthy yet. So, you know, when he's healthy and ready to go, yeah, I do think that the Patriots will consider bringing him back.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for the call, Sean. Sean in Salt Lake. 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline, web radio at patriots.com. We're going to talk more about the Cardinals coming up with Dave Pasch, the voice of the Cardinals, coming up inside the playbook.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, Better Banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Right now, we're having a grand opening sale to celebrate our new Kenmore Square location. You can get Red Sox tickets starting at just $19. With tickets to all the games, home and away, for all your favorite Boston teams, Ace Ticket has the best seats at the lowest prices, always. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com from any device. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Thanks, Steve. Welcome back inside the Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. We got to turn the attention now to the Arizona Cardinals, get inside Cardinals a little bit more with a friend of mine who is the voice of the Arizona Cardinals and also covers quite a bit of college football and basketball. His name is Dave Pasch. Dave joins us here. Dave, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for a couple of moments today.
Sure, John. How you doing?
Doing great. You know, Arizona made a little switch at quarterback. It was only because perhaps you had an ankle injury from Skelton. And I'm wondering now, do we find that Arizona on their way eastward this week is going to find themselves in some kind of a quarterback controversy on bringing Kevin Cobb back in there?
Well, they don't have a choice right now. You know, Skelton is out, and I would imagine it's going to be a few weeks. You don't know. It's not a high ankle sprain, so it's not as severe as they originally thought. And when it happened, I frankly, in my head, I thought he's done. Just the way he went down, and when you got players surrounding and praying and they bring the cart out, you know, usually it's not good. Yeah. That was my initial thought. So it's a blessing, certainly, that it's not as bad as they originally thought. And the fact that Kevin Cobb went in and played well, you know, he's done that in the past. I think Cobb has always been at his best when the pressure is off a little bit and he comes in relief. The two times he won player of the week in the NFC when he was with the Eagles, it was when he was basically coming in relief. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he was a starter, he got hurt. So it may be a little unfair in Philly, but certainly, you know, this training camp, he didn't play well. He did play well last year at times. And I think they still feel like, you know, he's got a chance to be a good quarterback. And this is a big test. You know, if he comes out and he plays well and the Cardinals win, well, then certainly they'll have to rethink things because I think Skelton in their minds right now is still number one.
Mm-hmm.
But if he doesn't play well, well, then, you know, we don't have a controversy. It all depends on how he plays and if they win the game.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm curious to know then, is it because of his inconsistent play last year or was it in the preseason really that he lost the job to Skelton in the first place?
Well, it was the preseason. I mean, last year he was hurt half the season. When mm-hmm. he was in, he had some good games, he had some bad games, and then he got hurt. And then they said, okay, we're going to, because John Skelton came in, and even though, you know, Skelton struggled at the quarters one through three in the fourth quarter, he had like 110 quarterback rating, and he was 5-2 as a starter. They said, you know, we need to open this up and give both guys a chance. And then in minicamps, Cobb was way ahead of Skelton. And at the start of training camp, I think the thought all along was Cobb was going to win the job. Cobb was just in games, just awful. Skelton was okay. In practice, though, Cobb was better, and I think they still weren't sure what to do, but they felt that, you know, Skelton had played well enough, and because of the pass, because of the wins last year, they had to go with him. But I don't think it meant that they were sold on Skelton or that Cobb had completely, you know, that they'd lost confidence in Cobb. So I think it's still fluid. I mean, I thought that, you know, both guys would play. I didn't think it'd be week two, or week one, I should say, where both guys were in there. But we may see this a lot this year, where one guy's in, and then depending on injury or performance, the next guy gets in the game.
So Ken Whisenhunt won't be shy to pull the trigger in case he feels like it's going to help him win a game or score a touchdown on a series or what have you.
No, in fact, you go back to their first year here, and Todd Haley was the offensive coordinator, and Matt Leinart was in his second year in the league.
Right.
And Kurt Warner basically had been written off. They started to put Warner in the game in the 2 minute. And Leinart would start, and they'd bring Warner in, and then all of a sudden they started realizing, boy, Warner, you know, he still got it. And then obviously the next year they're in the Super Bowl, and Kurt Warner, you know, won 4 playoff games in 2 years for him. And I think Cobb does that well. He's good at running a 2 minute offense. He's good at running the no huddle, the hurry up. But I don't think you can do that for a whole game. I think we'll see some of it this week, but I don't know that we'll see it the entire game. But the problem is if he gets hurt or if he doesn't play well, your only backup this week, if Skelton's out, is a rookie who at times looked good, but he's still a rookie and his first game would be against the Patriots. That's not the ideal situation.
That's Ryan Lindley, I believe.
Yeah, Ryan Lindley, sixth-round pick out of San Diego State.
Okay. What about Arizona's offense do you feel like has emerged particularly well? And this is outside of Larry Fitzgerald, but simply because that's the one player I think you'll realize that at least fans in New England know about when it comes to identifying the Arizona Cardinals. It's Larry Fitzgerald. What beyond Fitzgerald makes this team formidable?
Well, their offensive line, I think, was a bit of a surprise last week in how well they played against a pretty good front four in terms of pass blocking. The run blocking was not so great. They should have a pretty good 1-2 punch at running back with Beanie Wells and Ryan Williams. It didn't show up last week. Neither guy really got it done. Williams had a fumble and a second carry. But in terms of a skill level, I mean, those two guys got it, those two backs. They've got – Andre Roberts had a nice game last week. I think he's really emerging as a solid number two receiver. And then they've got some options at tight end. But clearly Larry Fitzgerald is the top target. But I think this week, John, it comes down to Cobb. It really, you know, if he plays well, they have a chance to win. If he plays like he did in the preseason, it could be ugly.
Okay. Defensively, let's flip it over to the other side for a couple of moments. Clearly, Patrick Peterson is the focal point there, and I was talking with our Patriots football weekly writers earlier about how Peterson, for all of the individual talent that he has, it's difficult to rely on a guy in the defensive backfield to be your focal point defensively because he's not a part of that front seven. He's not, you know, you got to get through the front seven to get to someone. Someone in the front seven can occupy more bodies. It's just a simple numbers game, whereas a job for a cornerback like Peterson is to cover a receiver. Outside of Patrick Peterson, who must play well for the Cardinals to be a dominant defense?
Well, I would disagree. I don't think Peterson is the focal point. I mean, he's still kind of growing as a corner. I mean, his strength right now is still being a punt returner. I mean, he's gotten better as a corner, and he's getting better as a corner. But, you know, they are a team that has really gotten good defensively because of Ray Horton, their defensive coordinator, and how he mixes things up, the types of blitzes he brings. I mean, their best defensive player is Darrell Washington.
Okay.
He is a star outside linebacker. And then you have Calais Campbell, who has become a Pro Bowl-type player. You have Dockett. You know, you have veterans. You have two young outside linebackers, Sam Ocho and O'Brien Schofield. I mean, Peterson is in the mix, but, you know, I think there are guys that stand out more in that defense. But they're going to have, you know, Brady's seen it all. So, you know, in terms of, you know, it's not like you're going to disguise him. I think, you know, those guys are capable, though. Calais Campbell's a real talent. So is Darrell Washington. I think if those guys play their best games and Ocho plays his best game, you know, then they can win. But if they're not getting any pressure on Brady, if they're not collapsing the pocket, then he's going to pick them apart. I mean, you can't, you know, even with, you know, good DBs, I mean, you've got to get some pressure on Brady.
Sure. To that end, then, who in, you mentioned Calais Campbell, who got to see play, you know, collegially at Miami, and then when you disappear out into the Arizona desert, it's kind of tough to keep up with some of these guys, Dave. You know, from going East Coast to West Coast yourself so many times. So, who else besides Campbell? You mentioned Darryl Washington as well. Especially in the front seven, you feel like is a comer that, you know, can help make this Arizona team a little bit better.
Well, I think they're hoping that Dan Williams, their first-round pick from a couple of years ago, nose tackle, plays like he did last week. He made some plays. He kind of split that role last year with a rookie, a sixth-round pick a year ago named David Carter.
Right.
And I think they're really hoping that Williams continues to emerge. I mean, their front three should be pretty good with Campbell, Dockett, and Williams. You know, Campbell is he's a guy that's going to get you 7 or 8 sacks a year and about 5 or 6 passes defended. And usually a couple of blocked field goals. He's 6'8". And Dockett, you know, Dockett is a veteran who's been around a long time, who makes plays. I think Williams is key. And then again, those two young outside linebackers, Acho and Schofield, those two guys, they got to get pressure on the quarterback. Cardinals were a good team in terms of pressuring the QB last year. But again, a lot of it was blitzes and disguising things. And, you know, I'm interested to see how they attack this, if they feel that, you know, they can get pressure with those five or with four guys, and if they don't blitz as much, if they don't take risks as much with Brady. It all depends on how Ray Horton dials it up. But, you know, in terms of being a defensive coordinator, this is a guy that seems to be on the fast track. I think, you know, if the Cardinals have a good year and their defense is in the top 10 or 15, he's going to have, now, some opportunities to be a head coach in the league.
Dave Pasch, radio voice of the Arizona Cardinals, joining us here in the Patriots playbook. 20-16 win over Seattle. How much bigger was it a win for Arizona just over the fact that it was a season opener, but getting a win over a divisional opponent as well? How big is that in a division that still seems to be kind of wide open?
Well, I think the stat is 70% of teams that start 1-0, and I said, or 70% of the teams that make the playoffs start 1-0. If you start 0-1, you only have a 30% chance of making the playoffs. So history says that, you know, you win your first game, you have a better chance of getting in the postseason. Of course, the Cardinals won their first game last year and then lost 6 in a row before going 7-2, their final 9. I think it's important for the division game. It's important because, you know, you don't want to start 0-2, and obviously this is, you know, their biggest challenge probably of the year. It'll be their toughest game all year, you know, to play in New England. New England doesn't lose at home. They don't lose on the road very often. So, you know, this is the best team the Cardinals will probably play this year. I think it was important the way it happened, where Cobb comes in, leads them down the field, and they get the go-ahead touchdown, and then the defense holds despite some poor officiating and the mess up with the timeouts. I think just that, you know, there was so much talk, you know, in the offseason that this is a team that, you know, it's a 4-win team, it's a 5-win team, even though they were 500 last year just because of the quarterback situation to be able to win that game, you know, and this—that's the kind of game they're going to have to win. It's going to be low scoring. They can't get in shootouts with teams. It's going to have to be low scoring, and you know, they're going to have to win games at home, and then, you know, steal a couple on the road. I mean, clearly San Francisco made a statement last week, winning at Green Bay,
right.
And you know, to beat them, you know, you may need to win 12 this year to win the division.
Good point. Fair point. San Francisco certainly looks like it could be one of the outstanding teams in the entire league with what they've done. But opportunity, I mean, you kind of feel like maybe if someone doesn't, you know, it just doesn't consider Arizona, and this is an opportunity maybe for this team to sneak up on some people, not only within the division, but maybe around the league a little bit?
Well, I think defensively people around the league, they know, you know, that it's a challenge because of how the Cardinals played the last half of last season. They were, you know, the best in the league on third down, among the best in the red zone, and of just the personnel. I think people respect that, and they know about Larry Fitzgerald. But again, I think the key is the quarterback, and you've got New England on the road, you've got the Jets on the road. Clearly, those are two tough games. You know, they've done well in St. Louis in recent years. You know, you've got to sweep that one. You've got to, you know, if you can sweep Seattle and then split with San Francisco, well, now you have a chance. I don't know that in the NFL anybody really sneaks up on anybody because these guys watch film. That's what these guys do. They spend all week, watching tape, and they know where the strengths are and the weaknesses are. And things change so much year to year. Players that, get 1 year older and then all of a sudden they can't do it anymore, or guys that were rookies last year take an enormous step in year two. And that's, what we'll see. I mean, this is a great test for them. The last time the Cardinals were here, they got blown out in December in a snowstorm. It didn't really matter. They went to the Super Bowl. But, this is week two. I mean, you can really get a taste of how good you are depending on how you play this week. The quarterback certainly, but, really, is their defense, how good is their defense? Well, we'll know after this week if they can shut down Brady and keep this game in the 20s and have a chance to win in the fourth quarter. They'll have a pretty good idea where they are.
Sure. Dave, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the big story around the country today. It has to do with the collegiate ranks, which I know that you do a lot of coverage on through your work on ESPN and football and basketball, and Notre Dame joining the ACC and leaving the Big East, and having been a former Big East broadcaster yourself at Syracuse. What are your thoughts on that move overall?
Well, I think for Notre Dame, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better situation. You move to the ACC for basketball while the Big East is certainly imploding or exploding, depending on how you look at it. The Big East basketball conference is, and the football conference, although Notre Dame was never going to join in football. I mean, to be able to go to the ACC in all your sports, the ACC clearly is a league that's got staying power. The Big East does not. And then we'll play, a handful of games against the ACC. We'll maybe take the ACC spot in a BCS game, but not have to be tied into a conference. I mean, you're talking about hitting a home run.
Sure.
Notre Dame.
Let me ask you something, though. Why do you think at this stage the Big East doesn't have any staying power? They've had to remake themselves, three or four times over again, and people keep leaving. Why do they keep leaving?
Well, I mean, I think one of the problems is the TV deal. They don't have a TV deal right now. I think they should have taken what they got last year. I think that might have helped. I think, this new deal that the ACC has, you look at the Pac-12 and Larry Scott and what he's done, I really think television plays a huge role in the money that's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some uncertainty there with the Big East. And then obviously with Syracuse and Pitt leaving. It's been going on for a while, the rumors about teams leaving the Big East. I mean, even going back, 10 years ago, there was talk of Syracuse leaving the Big East when, BC jumped and Virginia Tech and Miami jumped. But now I think with the uncertainty with the TV contract, that's my feeling, is that, schools are looking and say, boy, the ACC, the Big 12, Pac-12, look at these deals they've got. And they're starting their own network. Can the Big East start its own network and make additional revenue? I would say no. And, I think they've left money on the table with their deals, that they have right now. And they're hoping to hit a home run with, maybe an NBC. And I don't know that that's going to happen now, just because, who is really left in the league that you can sell, football or basketball? You can only sell the Villanovas and the Georgetowns so much, St. John's, when there's no, football to back them. The schools that have both are, and that are competitive, are leaving, with the exception of,
right,
of Louisville and Connecticut. And it may just be a matter of time for those schools.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody seems to think. And here's the issue at hand, though. Big East turned down the deal, TV deal last year, that was rumored to have been out there because they were instructed to do so by the Big East presidents. So, the Big East presidents at the time said, basically the Big East came to them and said, here's $1 billion. Do you want us to do it? And they said no. And so when it was turned down, when they turned it down, then Pittsburgh was the first one to bolt, and Syracuse followed them right out the door. So it's kind of like, wow, somebody somewhere was promised a little something that we don't know about.
Yeah, and I don't know that we're right. I don't know that we know everything. I think, what happened with Marinato is probably unfair. He was acting on behalf of them, of the president.
Yeah.
Now they have a guy with a TV background in there, leading that league, and obviously they have some great people still in that league. I have a lot of friends that work in the Big East and have a lot of respect for them. And I love the Big East. I mean, I love the Big East Basketball Conference. And having been an announcer at Syracuse when they were in the Big East for football, and competitive in the Big East. I mean, back when Miami was in it and Va Tech was in it. You know, I love the Big East, and I'm sad that, that this has happened to the Big East with, you know, especially basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Just the Big East tournament, how fantastic the Big East tournament is and that experience and at the Garden. But, you know, obviously this is where things are going. You know, with the playoff system, you know, and this whole idea of, you know, super conferences, which it just seems like that's where we're heading. You know, the Big East is the one being left out. And, yeah, it's unfortunate. But, you know, hopefully, you know, for their sake, that they continue to have success on the field, and that might lead to, you know, them turning heads. I don't know if they'll get the TV deal and the money, though.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, it's almost like, you know, the carrot and the stick and what's before the cart and the horse, you know. Cart and the horse might be before the carrot and the stick now. So, I mean, it's who knows. It's just it's an interesting conundrum, I suppose, and just got a little bit more muddled today with the news on Notre Dame. Dave Pasch. Yeah, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
The only thing I was going to say is I do kind of laugh when the comment, you know, today is, well, we just got a lot better academically. You know, like, first of all, that's about 99 on the list of important, and the first 98 had to do with dollars.
Well, I laughed because when I was watching the ACC press conference, the chancellor, who's the president of the whole group there, is at North Carolina. Geez, what is North Carolina going through right now?
Right, yeah, with the academic.
With the academic problems. So, I mean, I'm kind of like, wow, don't throw the word academia around here too much, guys, because, quite frankly, it's just not truthful. So,
no, you're not gonna tell anybody on that.
No, I don't think so. Dave, thanks so much for the time today. It's great to talk to you. Have safe travels this way. We'll come by and say hello on Sunday.
All right, sounds good, John.
Thanks good. Yeah. Dave Pasch, again, who's the voice of the Arizona Cardinals, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Some good points, all of them, not only on the Cardinals, but certainly on the national story of the day in the college ranks that will probably affect the way that you watch or listen to football and or basketball in the immediate future. All right, let me get to some other emails here. Those of you who have been kind enough to fire them off. Got a couple of other Facebook posts I want to get to. Webradio@patriots.com. Joe in Michigan wrote, in light of Chandler Jones being nominated for Defensive Rookie of the Week, which he was, who was the last Patriots rookie, offensive or defensive, to be awarded Rookie of the Week honors? You know, just off the top of my head, I'm going to say it was Gerard Mayo, but if it's somebody different than that, I got Kevin who put in a call PR to see if we could finally get the definitive answer on that one. Did you find that out?
Hopefully we get it before the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, hopefully. But if not, I think Mayo would probably be a safe bet on that one, year before last. Does that sound about right? Yeah, I think it sounds about right. Last year's first-round draft pick was Nate Solder, so I'm guessing it was probably Mayo. At any rate, John says, the whole Welker speculation is cracking me up. Every media outlet knows the Patriots are a game-plan team, but contrary to what certain organizations' owners do, like Irsay, the Patriots use the cloak-and-dagger tactics. Cloak-and-dagger, conducted with or marked by hidden aims or methods. It makes the media and highly reactionary fans try to figure out what's going on, while anyone that has actually paid attention to the team is just business as usual. Very true. You're right. Everybody tries to get the scoop on everybody else, John. Everybody tries to, it's not going to tell us what's going on. It's going to be up to me to figure out what's going on. Why do we need to really know? And why does it matter? In our need-to-know society, forget sports, society in general, in our need to know, because information is supposed to be free in this country and flowing in this country, why do we need to know? Does it really matter? Does it really affect us, Wes Welker's availability? No, it doesn't. He says, on a separate note, living in Phoenix, first off, I'm highly disappointed that the Cardinals game is a home game for the Pats. I waited patiently for 8 long years to be able to go see my team live, and it just didn't work in my favor. Reports are Skelton is going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. Looks like it's going to be Cobb this week, which is what Dave just told us. Cobb doesn't try to force the ball to the best player on the team, so I don't foresee it being terribly difficult to shut down Fitzgerald. I'm looking for the Pats to roll like 38-10, somewhere in that range. Just a note to Eric. I assume he means Scalavino. I must admit that for the longest time I viewed you as a pompous know-it-all. But however, I have admit outside of that, I love your work and have been thinking that maybe it's just the format and personalities around you on PFW and Progress that don't mesh with your style of communicating. Kudos to you for not compromising yourself to fit in. I'll have to save that one for Big E. That's good, huh? Thanks, John, for that. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. Brandon from California didn't really look at the play clock, but when the Patriots ran the no huddle, did they let the clock go down to single digits? If not, do you think they should use more of the clock? The answer to that is yes, they did, Brandon. I happen to notice that on several occasions when they were trying to work the clock. They definitely let the clock get down to single digits in an effort to play up-tempo, not allow substitutions to come on or off of the field, because you never know when they're going to snap the ball, but also to work the clock as best as they could so they don't get hammered in time of possession. So, yes, they definitely work the clock. That's part of the basis of, even though it's no huddle, even though it seems like it's hurry up, it's really not sometimes. It's really not. Sometimes they do it just to be able to control the clock the best way they know how. Canadian Mike in Florida says, with all the scoring and passing records broken last year, the knee-jerk reaction would be to keep passing and place less importance on the running game. Let's face it, our offense was responsible for getting us to the playoffs with little or no running. However, unlike popular belief, our defense was not the reason why we lost. While our defense has improved, now we have a running game. And my point is, BB could have settled for just improving the defense and relying on the offense to take us to the Super Bowl again. I think Bill knows the reason why we lost the game was because we didn't have a complementary running game. Teams like Green Bay and New Orleans are going to rely on passing and more passing. If we can get by Baltimore, which I think we can, it'll be New England versus San Francisco. I think the loser of the regular season game will win the Super Bowl. Well, you know, I think your reasoning is sound, Mike. I'm not sure I'd necessarily agree with it, but I see certainly where you're going with it. I also think getting by Baltimore is going to be a heck of a problem in another week. This one comes from Tony, Major Tony. Great show, best on Patriots Radio. Thank you. I wait for it and try to never miss it because it's a lot of fun, factual. I learned something I never knew every time. Kevin, how about that? That's good stuff,
a rare,
huh?
Rare compliment.
Rare. Well, you know, considering my head has been in the absolute clouds or the gutter, whichever you think about it. Joe writes me back. He says, John, after thinking about it, I actually think it may have been McCourty. He was year before last, not Mayo, right? 2 years ago. Yeah, this is his one, two. Yeah, third year. Okay. Yeah, okay, you're right. Matter of, see, they all run together for me. It could have easily been McCourty, simply because I think he had in his rookie year before last, it would have had to have been, I think he had 1 week where he, like, picked two passes or something, I think, that year, because he did lead the team in picks a couple years ago as a rookie, which is why he got into the Pro Bowl. So McCourty and Mayo would have been the year before, right? That makes sense now. Okay. All right, Joe, good stuff. Thank you. See, I stand corrected, which I often do, just because I think off the top of my head here and don't, you know, like, you know, go to the expert, like, you know, the PFW, or I've got the internet here in my hands, or I talk to guys like Kerry Byrne, or, you know, I mean, you know, I don't have the experts handy. So maybe I need to tune to the experts more often. And Kerry Byrne's coming up in just a couple of minutes. How are you?
Doing well, John. How are you doing?
Let's make sure. Oops. Boom. Now try that one.
Much better. How you doing, John? Good to
Excellent.
See you.
Excellent. What do you got coming up for us?
We got a lot of great stuff. You know, good to finally have football back. We're going to tackle the iciest issues in football through the eyes of the cold, hard football facts. We're
like
going to interview Russell Baxter, one of our contributors. We're going to talk about food and tailgating.
Nice.
We're going to run. We're going to do our stat attack. We're going to run through every game, if we can squeeze it all in, every game in week two. And then, of course, talk about Patriots, Cardinals, look back at the Patriots, Titans, great win for New England. We're going to do a little bit of everything, John.
Sounds like a plan. All right, so you get a little bit of a sneak peek with Russell Baxter. Russell joins us in the playbook on Thursdays, and we'll run through the games as well. So you'll have that coming up here on Patriots.com Radio. Thanks to Dave Pasch, the voice of the Arizona Cardinals, for joining us, for Eric Scalavino from PFW for tuning in as well. Overall, as he always does, he'll be back in the opening hour of the program tomorrow. And tomorrow, we want your thoughts on the game. Score predictions. Normally what we do on Thursdays. What do you think about it? We'll give you a chance to let it soak in a little bit. Is it really going to be a Patriots rout in the home opener this Sunday? I get the sense from you You kind of think that, don't you? How worried are you really about the Cardinals? And if they do lose, where might they lose it? We'll put that on the table for you tomorrow. Kerry Burns coming up next. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. Mañana.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.